Here we go. This is all good. We're doing cardiac today. Right now, I hope. Still working? Yes, good. Did you get the PowerPoint?
No.
You're still happening. Excellent. Week number 7. Cardiac disease. Do we get Bethany? Bethany's still lost?
I just called her, she's coming.
Oh, good, okay. Good. I just want to make sure that this is going good. You know, good. Yeah, I'm terrified the GarageBand has been doing weird things. I'm so afraid that it's not going to work for us. Slideshow. I want to talk about the heart. Welcome back. Sorry to keep you in. I want you to think about the heart for just a little bit of time. As a muscle unto itself, all right? We think about it having the vessels that go through it, and its main job is to pump blood, right? But it's also extremely important to keep that cardiac muscle, the heart itself, very healthy. And deficits in that organ in itself, whether it be oxygenation or electrical impulses, are going to impact the heart's ability to pump, right? And it won't work. So we want to talk just a little bit about coronary heart disease today. And you know about coronary circulation electrical properties, right? I can assume you have that knowledge from patho and from physio and from anatomy, is that correct? Yes, tell me yes.
Yes, yes.
So take some time to kind of review those. I'm sorry? In order to get some of the answers right, you will have to have that knowledge. Yeah. Am I going to specifically ask you about things? No. But I might very well have, you will need that knowledge to come to the correct answer. Here's correct knowledge, right? You should know how the blood goes through the heart.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
So the morning class told you, right?
They had
a little quiz on how the blood. You're not going to, so you guys can relax.
Okay.
We're not? No. I'll get something else really nice for you, okay?
Oh.
Don't think you're going to lose out on the points.
Oh, nice.
But don't you think it'd be kind of dumb to do the same quiz twice? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Smarter than that. Okay, so you are remembering that there's a left coronary artery, the anterior descending circumflex branch, you have the right coronary artery, remember all this, supplies the right ventricle, the posterior descending artery, you know all that, right? Now, what you may not, a word that may be new to you is collateral channels. Anybody familiar with the word collateral circulation? What is collateral circulation? Heard that term before? We use it often in discussing the heart, but actually it could be true for any part of the body. What's collateral circulation? That's when one vessel isn't working well for some reason. It's occluding, say, from atherosclerosis. It's becoming stenotic. It's becoming very thick and hard and doesn't work. So what's going to happen is the vessels around it will take the load of the circulation. So the accessory vasculature will take on the work of that major vessel if that major vessel is not doing its own work. It's called collateral circulation. Very common in the heart, which is why you can have people with occlusions up to 90-something percent and they'll be asymptomatic, which is pretty amazing. Yet their vessels are occluded. The major vessels can be occluded a lot. Because the collateral vessels take over, which is just a remarkable compensatory mechanism that our body has. So that may be a new word for you. So remember that cardiac cells are not like any other cells in your body, right? They have all these things. Remember, they respond to electricity, which is very unusual, correct? So they're very special cells, but they are still muscle cells that need oxygen to survive, correct? Okay, so let's talk about some of the physiology and manifestations of common disease problems. Right? Atherosclerosis, what is that? Narrowing, yeah, or clogging, right? Primarily, underlying process in coronary heart disease, impaired perfusion of myocardial tissue. Okay, that's what it results in. Okay, risk factors. You guys know the risks, right? What are the risks?
Smoking.
Smoking, good. What else? Age. Fatty foods, yeah. There's some genetic predisposition in triglyceride formation, right? The cause of many aneurysms. What's an aneurysm? What's an aneurysm? Not a block. It's all sounding good. I'm looking for aneurysm is when there's a weakening of vessel. You've got the vessel happening. Right? Nice vessel. And let's say there's a little weak in my part right here. It can go out like this and become an aneurysm. Okay. So there are times when what happens? This is now like a balloon that's been pushed out, right? So what happens sometimes when we blow a balloon up and stretch the rubber too much?
Right.
You have a bleed, correct? We have brain aneurysms. We have abdominal or aortic aneurysms. Abdominal aortic aneurysm. Remember? Coming right down? Okay? Yeah. So it's not at all uncommon. What happens when a large vessel like that ruptures? Dead. Pretty fast. And there can be small little aneurysms. Sometimes they're treatable, sometimes they aren't. Sometimes people live for years with them, and they're fine. It's not a problem. There are brain aneurysms, right? Sometimes those are untreatable. Sometimes they're fine. Sometimes they're time bombs, right? Depending on what's going on in the body. So that's basically what an aneurysm is. And atherosclerosis is a major cause of aneurysms, as well as obesity, cigarette smoking, all those things that you... Yeah, you can, or some of the radiographic scans where they shoot you in with radiographic dyes and you can watch and see the constriction of the vessels as well as any weird things like that. But I found one once on examination that was really scary, a ruptured one. It was just, I'll never forget, I was a new nurse and I had a patient that came in who was admitted and I was doing my assessment and I listened to bowel sounds and I was in the I grabbed him and I heard this, and I'm like, what? I didn't know what in the heck it was. Didn't have a clue. And the surgeon walks in, and I said, there is something really weird in this abdomen. And he goes, yeah, he has an aortic aneurysm. I'm taking surgery. I'm like, so that was a perfect example of when something is wrong, you'll know it. You know, you'll hear, I have no idea what, I probably couldn't, but there was something really weird in that assessment that was very strange. So, yeah, you'll pick it up. But normally, yeah, it's radiography. You have some kind of a picture so you can see them. Okay, what about MIs, myocardial ischemia? Heart attacks, right? Results in the manifestation of coronary heart disease, angiopectoralis, acute coronary syndrome, myocardial infarction, okay? Myocardial ischemia results from inadequate oxygen supply to the heart muscle, okay? Now, this may be chronic. In the case of stable and vasoplastic anginas, silent myocardial ischemia, not uncommon. These are anginas that are normally relieved by rest. You rest the heart, the oxygen comes back, and the heart's fine. acute angina is from unstable angina and often leads to a MI, a myocardial infarction. Now, let's move on to the infarction. First we'll do some angina pectoris. This is chest pain, okay? Angina pectoris. Chest pain resulting from reduced coronary flow or ischemia. Now, remember, you know when you run and your muscle gets a muscle cramp, what's physiologically what's going on at the cellular level when that happens? What's happening? Right, so not enough oxygen. What happens to the cells? Right, they move from aerobic metabolism to anaerobic, and they produce, which causes what? Incredible pain. The same thing happens to the heart. No different. So now I want you to think of the heart as a muscle. So without that enough oxygen, it's going to have exactly the same response as any other cell in the body. The pain will feel tight, squeezing heavy, okay, constricting. But if it goes on, it can become an MI. All right? You may feel substernal pain, jaw radiation, epigastric back. Okay, it radiates on if the problem continues. Or it just may be a bit of pain in the chest as if it were a muscle cramp like we've all experienced. It goes on and you end up with dyspnea, pallor, tachycardia. Now, why tachycardia?
Because your heart's trying to get oxygen, so it's beating faster.
Yeah, it's working harder in order to compensate for the lack of, right? Okay, because remember the homeostasis that our bodies always try to maintain. People are going to start getting scared at this point. Sure. Anxiety, fear, there's something going on. There is such thing as a silent myocardial infarction with myocardial ischemia that can lead to an infarction with no symptoms. So no, it's not always preceded. The angina pectoris is not always preceded by a lot of pain. Okay. Now, women are a little bit they say they're atypical. I don't think we're atypical. It's just how we happen to present. Commonly, women present with angina or with an MI with feelings of indigestion, nausea, vomiting, and upper back pain. Quite different from the man with the left arm pain and radiating up to his jaw, right? So in the past, many women have been sent home from the ED with indigestion and gone home to die with, from a heart attack.
And this is with MI or...
The angina pectoris is a precursor to an MI. So let me get that straight for you. Thank you for asking for the clarification, Brittany. If an angina persists, we can move into a full blown myocardial infarction. Okay. So if a woman is experiencing angina as a precursor to an MI, 10 years ago it wasn't uncommon for them to be sent home, have a full-blown heart attack and die, and full-blown MI. Is that a little clearer, Brittany? Okay. And then why do you think that we've had this horrible lapse in knowledge? Why is that? Yeah, but it's because the research was done on middle-aged white men, right? Who happen, in this case, to present very differently than women. For the same disease state. I think it's in the spring, there's a day we're all supposed to wear red to recognize women in cardiac health. Because today women are quickly gaining, getting as sick as men, as far as our hearts are concerned. And I think a lot of it is because it's just being identified, where it was missed before. So know that. But granted, also the problem is I think we're seeing a lot more women with indigestion in the emergency rooms. Okay, sure. Now I know that. If I'm feeling some really bad heartburn, I'm going to make sure that I'm okay. So know that. There's a little bit of difference in women. ECGs, what are they? What's an ECG do? Can you say that a little louder? Right, and measure the electrical conduction of the heart, which is why they're in several places all over the body. You're going to learn a lot about these in June Wilson's class in your MedSearch 3. So I just want to introduce the concept so that when you see them in the hospital, you know what they are. Now, in the hospital, if you're on a cardiac floor, You're going to see many patients with, they're going to have a whole 12 lead on. What do you see? Have you seen them? What's telemetry? Yeah, what is, no, go ahead. Right, how do they do that? What is it? What are you looking at? How do they monitor the heart? What do you? What do you see on their bodies?
Oh, they have a thing right.
Yeah, they have a little like a transistor radio in their pocket, right?
And then yeah, they put in the pocket with the wires, and then
where do those wires go?
To the, I know they have a secretary that specializes.
Yeah, but where do they go on the body?
The
1, 2, 3, yeah, three different places on the body. So they're like mini ECGs, aren't they? Yeah. So any cardiac floor, your patient's going to be hooked up to this kind of monitoring. And then you're correct. There is the, at the nurse's station, there's generally a screen that shows the electrical conduction of the heart, right? Somewhere in the hospital, there's a room where there are screens for everyone in the whole hospital who's hooked up to these things. And there's a nurse monitoring them. And if there's a problem, that nurse will call down and talk to you, the nurse in charge of the patient, and say, I'm getting some weird reading here. Go check your patient, okay? And Professor Wilson will teach you how to read these in a couple of semesters. But take a look if you have a cardiac patient. Look at them. And even if you just happen to find them in the charts, take a look. They're fascinating. And yeah, you're looking at the electrical conductivity of the heart. And that's about as deep as we're going to go into them for our class. So acute coronary syndrome is a condition of unstable cardiac ischemia. Okay, maybe there is significant injury to the myocardial tissue. It might or might not cause significant injury. Okay, that's acute coronary syndrome. It's a state in which coronary blood flow is acutely reduced, but not fully occluded. So I hope from what you're getting here, heart attacks don't just boom happen. There's generally some pathology that leads up to them. Okay, a person has some angina. They have some atherosclerosis. They have some hardening of the arteries. They have episodes of acute coronary syndrome. Right? So generally, cardiac patients have a history. There's things that are going on before heart disease finally takes their lives. Acute coronary syndrome is precipitated by a rupture or erosion of an atherosclerotic plaque with the formation of a blood clot that does not fully occlude the vessel. And again, we have spasm pain. And here we have substernal epigastric pain, chest, left shoulder, all that kind of thing. Right. Yes, Brittany. Myocardial infarction is when it's occluded. Okay, and this can be a rupture or erosion of a plaque. So it can be a rupture rather than an occlusion. But the bottom line is the same, Brittany. We're not getting the blood to the heart. And so the oxygenation of that muscle is diminished. Okay? So an acute myocardial infarction, that's when there are irreversible changes to the cells. The conditions we spoke of before now, there's a lack of oxygen to the cells. Hopefully that oxygen can be restored in a short period of time and there's no cellular damage. But even if someone suffers a more major acute MI, that doesn't necessarily mean death. The heart can go on and pump even though there are some dead cells, even though there's some necrosis. That being said, what do you think happens to the electrical conductivity if there's some dead tissue? It's crazy. It's weird. Yeah. It's not normal. But we're so technologically advanced today when it comes to heart disease that many times we can work through that. We can do internal defibrillators and other things that will allow someone to continue to live even though they have a small portion of their heart that's not functioning. But in general, we think of an MI as being a massive deoxygenation of the heart. So if we're able to provide compressions quickly, what are we able to do then? Keep the oxygen going, right? Yeah. And if we can keep that heart oxygenated, we're going to keep the muscle alive, aren't we? Which is why, time is muscle. So the longer that muscle is without oxygen, the more likely is the chance that the cells in the tissue will die. But if we can keep it oxygenated, we can keep it alive. Until we can get them to surgery, they can have the blockage, we can get them right meds, we can get them to the ER. That's why it's so very important. So here's some examples of, let's say this is the ischemic zone, and some odd electrical conduction that's going to happen, depending on where the problem was. So you may see some very odd shapes in those configurations when you're looking at ECG strips. And do look at them. It's fascinating, but know that they may be acting like that because of some ischemia in the heart muscle. Minimal ischemia, allowing the heart to still pump efficiently enough to sustain life, which I think is kind of cool. Leads us into cardiac dysrhythmias. Cardiac dysrhythmias occur for a number of reasons. They're basically defined as a disturbance or irregularity in the electrical system of the heart. So either they're not getting triggered from the brain, the heart is not conducting the electrical impulse through the tissue, for instance, if there's some ischemic tissue, or it's not receiving for some reason. Okay, for all those reasons, it's a disturbance or irregularity in the electrical system of the heart. Okay. So tachydysrhythmias, what would they be? What do you think?
Fast.
So you didn't have to go to my seminar. Fast, right. Fast. There. Tell you a lovely story about my mother. You know my mother? She had her blood pressure had been high, so I called and said, "How's your blood pressure?" "It's doing real well," she says. "It's under 120. I said, "It's systolic." She says, "Yeah, it's doing great." I said, "Great, good." She goes, "I have a little trouble by one thing." And I said, "What's that?" And she says, "Well, my heart rate's up a little bit." And I said, "Really? How high is it?" And she goes, "It's been about 120 for the last couple days." I said, "I'll be right over." And she said, no. "What do you think?" And I said, I think you need to see your doc right now." And she goes, "Well, I'll give her a call." And she said, "No, mother. They're not coming over and we're going. I'll call her, dear. Don't worry." So she calls her. She drives herself down to the Kaiser Clinic in Santa Fe, walks in. They take her vitals, hook her up to EKG, send her by ambulance over to the hospital. And she was terribly embarrassed about it. She had to leave her car, and it was all terribly embarrassing to have to go in the ambulance. What was the problem? Why did they react so strongly to that? What was going on? The results of the EKG showed an arrhythmia, right? Her heart's beating like this. There's none of this. How long can that 82-year-old heart do that? She'd been at it for 2 days, you know? Yeah, right. She at some point, that heart's going to stop, and then she's going to pass out, and she's driving from, which is why they sent her an ambulance. So see how, yeah. So that's why you have to watch these things really carefully. And here's this old lady that thinks her blood pressure is just fine. And it is fine because what's the body doing? Keep that blood pressure up. Compensating, and then it threw it into an arrhythmia, right? And the heart's going crazy, not pumping in a nice fashion, pumping really fast and really hard, keeping the BP up. So that was fun. Okay. They stuck her on EKG, give her some meds, and now she's home on blood thinners and cardiac meds, and she's doing fine, thinking and taking her pulse. And now she knows. And I think that's a perfect example of teaching. The nurse should have taught her, or I should have too, that, okay, now you're monitoring your blood pressure, watch your pulse too. So let that be a teaching moment for you guys. Don't just tell someone that's when you give them high blood pressure medicine to watch high blood pressure. Obviously, there's something cardiac going on. Teach them that they need to watch their pulse too. And 120 is not good. Okay. Brady dysrhythmias, what's happening here? Look. Right, slow, which is going to happen if you continue with the tachydysrhythmias, right? Eventually the heart's going to give out and start going slow, correct? You can only keep this up for so long. It's going to go back. Atopic is all over the place, and you'll see those too. So the sudden cardiac death, unexpected or abrupt death that occurs within hours of onset. Generally within 1 hour of onset of cardiovascular symptoms. It's usually caused by ventricular fibrillation and cardiac arrest. So the ventricles are in fibrillation. It causes the heart to not have enough oxygen and completely stop working. People have a sense of impending doom, and usually they die within an hour. Okay? Can be preceded by some acute coronary syndrome, a myocardial infarction. There's some generally some history that precedes someone with an MI. Coronary heart disease affects a lot of people. A lot of people. Which is probably why we're so good at treating it. And there's angina pectoris, acute coronary syndrome, myocardial infarction, we talked about dysrhythmias, heart failure, and sudden death. So, what are we going to do as nurses for these people? Well, for coronary heart disease, we're going to aggressively manage the risk factors. Again, the common risk factors, smoking, obesity, diet, right, triglycerides, taking their medications, keeping that blood pressure within normal limits, all those things, teaching them to monitor themselves, take your pulse too, right, all those kinds of things. Some common nursing diagnoses are imbalanced nutrition, sure. Someone with a genetic factor and produces a lot of triglycerides, we surely want them to consider their nutrition as well as everyone else, but someone particularly with a genetic predisposition. This is a nice nursing diagnosis that you might want to use at times. Ineffective health maintenance. Pretty good. You can apply that just about any situation, right? Yeah. Ineffective health maintenance. So we talked about angina. So when someone has angina, we're going to maintain coronary blood flow and cardiac function. All right. That's ineffective tissue perfusion. Okay, they're not getting enough oxygen. Risk for ineffective therapeutic regime management. This diagnosis commonly has to do with medications. People who have angina normally take what kind of med? Anybody know? Nitroglycerin. And how is that packaged? Remember? What does it look like? Exactly. It's a sublingual pill, generally in an amber bottle. So these are little ladies that have those pills in their purse, and they're not even walking down the hall with you without their purse. Because they got to have their heart med. That they'll readily pop under their tongue. Which is a little bit frightening. This morning, one of our students was talking about a death he experienced in the last week. And the woman had taken quite a bit of nitro. And they thought that could have been a contributing factor to her death that afternoon. So she slowed her heart. Right. So, did it? Is that the same patient? Yeah? Was it the same patient this morning? Oh, yours, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah? You had the same patient? Yes. Yeah. What was that? Is that her heart kind of gave out?
Yeah, he was there, actually.
Yeah, that's what you're saying. Was he?
Yes,
completely. Maybe talked a little bit about it. Yeah, it's your classic heart disease continuing on and going down.
So wait, when she was on home, she was taking them because she thought she hurt.
Right? You want to speak to that, Kai? What was the thought?
I believe she was on dialysis, and she had a shipment to dialysis that day, and she was feeling sick after dialysis. She felt really weak. I don't know what the rest of us did, but I know she felt really good when she came to the hospital and she was talking, she was in pain in her chest, but she had coronary heart disease way into that, and the doctor said that she probably wouldn't make it. And the other student went down to the cath lab, they were trying to do a stent on her, and she had
but in the ICU
too. Yeah, she was in ICU.
In terms of like risk for ineffective therapeutic regimen, is it like that they think that they need to monitor their heart disease?
Exactly.
Things, so they're like copying.
Right. Exactly. That's ineffective therapeutic regimen management or regime management. Yeah. And yes, and we'll talk a little bit further in the class today about nitro and how it's administered. But yeah, you're giving these little old, hopefully not demented ladies, these very powerful drugs. And you do sometimes have to pop more than one, and they become rather dependent. So the thought was possibly it could have been a contributing factor to this lady's death. Not that she wasn't going to die in another few hours anyway, but it could have been. The pain of acute coronary syndrome might be relieved by nitroglycerin, or might be more severe or longer duration than a patient's normal angina. Okay, so now we're moving into acute coronary syndrome. Usually these people are generally in the ICU. Often we do coronary revascularization processes. Anybody familiar with that at all? Cabbages? We do vessels. Okay. You may take a graft from the leg, move it to the heart. Right. Revascularization.
Is that also called bypass?
Yeah, some bypass surgery. Coronary artery bypass. Apparently, it's minimally invasive coronary artery surgery. Mm-hmm. Sounds pretty scary to me. Okay. Let's see. We also do angiopathies, where we actually can clean out the plaque from the vessels. We also do balloon therapy. We put balloons in the vessels, angiopathies, and blow them up to allow the vessels to be clear. We put stents in vessels. Apparently, Ty, your lady had lots of stents.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So there are many, many ways that we treat and we continue to treat people with vascular problems of the heart. And same on nursing care. There's not a lot the nurse can do. We can help them with their meds. We can monitor them and see what's going on. And we can prevent. That's about it. Acute myocardial infarction, not a lot for us to do either. Maintain, relieve pain. Do what we can to reduce the extent of myocardial damage. Certainly. Maintain oxygenation as much as possible. Right? And we talked about the pump. Cardiac rehab. Yeah, this is a huge area of nursing practice. Since we're doing so well as a medical community in treating heart patients, they are surviving, and there's a lot of rehabilitation that goes on, which is really cool. So, and nurses are very involved in long-term programs, exercise, lifestyle modification, lots of education, lots of teaching, okay, improving the patient's quality of life. Acute MI, your nursing diagnosis will be pain, ineffective tissue perfusion, ineffective coping, yeah, for sure, fear. All good nursing diagnoses for myocardial infarctions. Cardiac rhythm disorders, this is when the electrical, well, we talked about that. We want to identify the dysrhythmia, seeing how it's affecting them. How is this whole thing affecting their physical and psychosocial well-being? But we want to treat the underlying cause. A couple things that are done is synchronized cardioversion, where the heart, they go in and they try to shock the heart to get it back to the right kind of pumping. Okay, so electric impulses are going right. It's not dissimilar to what we did when we all took our CPR classes, our basic life support, and we did the paddles things, right? It's defib. Please know that there are also implanted defibrillators, permanent defibrillators that are implanted in people's hearts that sense when the electrical conductivity is not there or when the heart starts into fibrillation and the heart is shocked right there within the person, and then they can maintain.
I
believe they do. Yeah, they are aware. Mm-hmm. I've talked to people with them, and they say, yeah, they're used to it. It's not a huge deal, but yeah, they can tell. And you'll have to ask your patients, too. That was just my experience of talking to one person, Brittany. But
is that what a pacemaker? Is that a pacemaker?
No, it's a little different. This is a pacemaker will just make sure that it's firing correctly.
Okay.
Whereas a defibrillator will give it a little shock to bring it back. Because you have to do something to the muscle to get it out of that wacky beat. So it's got to stop that, and then we can start the pacemaker. Often people have both. It's not unusual for them to have both. There's not a lot we can do with sudden cardiac death. People die quickly, generally within an hour. Call life support measures. That's about it. Some diagnostic tests you're going to see. Lipid profiles. This is your cholesterol screen. Right? You can tell that people tend to have high cholesterol. The perfusion imaging, a lot of different tests that you may see. Angina, the diagnosis is again with looking at an ECG, taking medical history. Lots of different tests, acute coronary, same deal. Here's some interesting laboratory tests that you're going to see for MIs. All right, you'll see a whole panel of these tests. The CKMB has to do with enzymes that are produced by the heart after an MI. And these peak several hours after, so you'll see these blood draws for this. So you note that. So if you see this on a chart, you'll know that they were considering an MI. That could have been a problem. You can tell someone's had one. We talked a little bit about diagnostic imaging, how those procedures are extensive regarding the heart. Cardiac rhythm, yeah, ECG is the main. We do electrophysiology studies and lab tests again. So what are we going to do? We're going to help lower, right, heart disease, teach people about their cholesterol-lowering medications. We learned about this in Pharm, right? Statins are a common one. Remember? Several different kinds. Angina, we're going to talk a little bit more about the use of nitroglycerin. People are commonly on the 81 milligrams of aspirin. Also, generally, anticoagulants. Okay, you see your heart patients on that. And for acute MI, we're giving them all sorts of things. Arrhythmias, let's see what else. Pre-op care. That's about it. Okay, I have a little exercise for you. Pause the garage and come back. Okay, garage band, we're going to pause you. We're going to continue on and talk a little bit about the exercise. Okay, let's talk about the signs of hypoxia. So stupor and confusion is late. Why is stupor and confusion and stupor late? Why do you think? What's your thought? Really, why? Yes, ma'am. Yeah, and why would that be, not enough oxygen is going to the brain, correct? And why would that be a late sign of hypoxia rather than an early sign? Yeah, there's going to be some compensation going on. It's going to take a while. Your body's going to preserve your brain for quite as long as it can. It's not going to be an early sign of oxygen-deprived brain. And that's what a stupor and confusion is going to show you, is an oxygen-deprived brain, right? You're not going to see it right away. It's going to take a little bit to get there. Unlike pallor of skin and mucous membrane. Pallor just means pale. So you may see that in the face. The brain is still oxygenated enough to function. But you're going to see something going on. Now, it's a really good nurse that's going to pick up these early signs before they get to the late signs. Okay? So don't let it progress to the late sign before you take some action. Bradycardia is late. Why? Tachy first, and then? Brady, why, May? Why?
Right.
It's tired, it gives up. Exactly. Yeah. So, like my mom, 81 years old, tacky, great. How long is that going to continue? A couple days? That's why she had to take the ambulance from Santa Fe to Ireland. Because, I mean, it could have happened any time, right? Could have just given up. Okay? So be careful. Don't let someone say, the heart rate's fine. Well, wait a minute, it's fine now. How much longer is it going to be able to be fine? Okay, so it's very important to understand that the tachy is just a compensatory mechanism. When the heart gives out, we're going to get to Brady. It's going to slow. And then we're in real trouble. Hypotension? Yeah, why? Late, yes. Good point, the bradycardia, sure. We're not pushing as much blood through the heart, therefore the pressure is going to be less. Any other reasons? No, it's just simply not enough. We're not oxygenating the body. The heart's ability to pump has slowed. Okay? And that you'll see that in the bradycardia, and you'll see it in the hypotension. You can't keep the level of pressure up. So we're going to get hypotension. Elevated hypertension early, of course. Because now the compensatory mechanisms are working, right? Okay, good. Excellent. Restlessness is early. You may not see stupor and confusion, but you probably will see some restlessness. People are not comfortable. Something's going on. They know something's happening. They're not comfortable. They're restless. That would be early. Now, cyanosis, yeah, we're going to see some pallor early, but we're not going to see the blue mucous membranes. Have you seen anyone that's really missing oxygen? Have you ever seen, like, all blue around the mouth? Yeah, have you, Brittany?
No, my patient's empty, and she had empty everything. So, and she wasn't even a smoker. She had a pulmonary embolism.
Wow. So, you got to see cyanosis?
Yeah, yeah. She well, no, this is like not even in the hospital. It's okay. Like my home health care job. Like, uh-huh. She can't even walk. She can't even step up like one of these little stairs without having to sit down.
Because there's no oxygen, no energy, no fatigue. There we go. The fatigue question, right?
Yeah. She can't even do anything without. She can't even walk like 4 feet without.
Oxygen. And without her oxygen, she turns cyanotic.
She didn't even have oxygen. It wasn't even helping. It was overloading her. It was too much.
Because it's pulmonary.
She couldn't take it, right?
So she is cyanotic a lot?
Yeah. Her lips would, especially when she walks, like, it would really, like...
Because she's stressing her body.
Right.
And you see it in the lips and then all around this, the whole mouth area. That tissue shows.
Like, gray.
Like, you get this gray look that's just really yucky.
She's kind of dealing with it. I mean, she was at home. Like, it was, like, how she lived every day.
So. Well, she didn't have a lot of options. Right. So cyanosis you're going to see late. And Hurat. Hurat's for early. So you might not think any of these one things alone would be problematic. But when you start seeing the majority of these symptoms together, that's when you're going to say to yourself something may very well be going on here. All right. There could definitely be a problem with some cardiac perfusion. There's some hypoxia. Right? And you're going to pick it up. Okay? So it's not just one thing when it's early hypoxia. You have to look at the whole patient. That's where your assessment skills are going to be important. Okay? And your intuition and your thinking and all those wonderful skills that I know you have. Right? Or you are developing really quick because unfortunately making. Okay, let's talk a little bit about some more cardiac disorders. Talked about cardiac heart disease. I'm just going to quickly review some disorders. So let's talk about heart failure first. Heart failure is a complex syndrome. Remember what a syndrome is? What's a syndrome? Symptoms.
Yeah.
Leading up to one disease. Or a group of complications or disorders, not necessarily diseases. right, together. So heart failure is a complex syndrome in which the heart is unable to pump enough blood to meet the metabolic demands of the body. As a result, cardiac output falls and tissue perfusion decreases. Okay? Let's see. And then, of course, when the heart begins to fail, compensatory mechanisms kick in, correct? This may be all well and good for someone that's nice and healthy. But what about someone that has a diseased heart, has a damaged heart? Maybe they had an MI a few years ago. Maybe they're overstressing their heart. I heard in this morning's news about a nurse from Kaiser who saved a marathon runner in L.A. Anybody hear about that? Yeah, some distance, some race, and a 40-year-old guy collapsed like a tenth of a mile from the finish line. And the nurse saw it, walked up, started compressions, and basically was able to continue his oxygen and saved his life. Yeah.
Have you heard anything about them using ice now to preserve the heart during MI?
I have not, but it makes sense.
I've just heard a couple things in the news, and I had a teacher ask about it in my English class at a couple semesters ago, so someone saved her out here when the doctors and saw them and immediately put them on the ice and they opened them up and I don't know how exactly it worked, but it was I tried to Google on it.
Could be. Could very well be. Systolic failure, diastolic failure, right-hearted failure, left-hearted failure, all sorts of problems that occur with the heart. Here's some schematics. You're going to get right-sided heart failure from pulmonary edema, right? It's going to back out. Okay, right-sided heart failure. So, in general, heart failure is a low versus high output failure. There can be a high output failure, a low output failure. It can be chronic, it can be acute. A pulmonary edema can be the manifestation. Also, rheumatic fever, caused by what? What's rheumatic fever? What's a causative agent? Remember? Streptococcus, right? Yeah. Infections get so bad that the heart valves are infected. And there's some rheumatic heart disease. Often the valves aren't functioning. Okay, get some murmurs. There could be inflammatory and infective diseases of the heart. Myocarditis, endocarditis, pericarditis. Think about all the parts of the heart can certainly become infected. There's all sorts of problems. So not only is the muscle, we were talking earlier about the muscle and keeping it healthy. Well, now we have all the parts of it that we have to preserve from infection problems. That's constricted pericarditis. I think your book has some more photos too. Now, there are valvular diseases. We're getting pretty good at replacing valves, aren't we? What do we use to replace valves? Anything next? Yeah, bovine valves, right? We use pig, we use cow. We use plastic valves. As I said, the technology in cardiac healthcare is astounding. We have hearts down far better than we have cancer, in my opinion. We do an excellent job in general of maintaining people with heart problems. So, yeah, valvular problems. Now, remember what the tricuspid valves looks like, right? Three pieces, right? Tricuspid. Okay? They can be floppy, all right? They can get hard, and so they don't open up. They can be incomplete. They can regurgitate. So if you have a valve like this, what's going to happen? Well, it's going to go backwards. Okay, that's a murmur, isn't it? Okay, that's a murmur. Okay. And we can replace valves. Mitral stenosis, it's a narrowing of the valve. All sorts of problems. And then we have the regurgitation. And the prolapse, it can actually do that. Stenosis, regurgitation. So we can have tricuspid stenosis, tricuspid regurgitation, pulmonary stenosis, pulmonary regurgitation. You may see any of this. Cardiomyopathy, secondary, goes on and on. Heart risks for disease or cardiac cardiomyopathies, hypertension, risk factors. Any kind of coronary artery disease, atherosclerosis, hardening of the arteries. So our goal is to teach people, we reduce the risks, okay, risk factors, same kind of thing. Bit of a problem now about our immigrant populations who aren't seeking health care when it's really needed. And I wonder what kind of manifestations we're going to see when these people, the children today, get older that may not be treated for strep throat, right? That may go into rheumatic fever, may have damaged heart valves, right? They may survive the infection but then have problems later on. Carditis, myocarditis, valvular disease, what else? Hemodynamics. It's also important to study how the blood flows through the heart. There's many, many ways to do this. And Professor Wilson's class will go into a lot of the ways that we monitor the hemodynamics of blood flow to the heart, how effective it is. We can completely evaluate the cardiac and circulatory functions. And many different ways to do this, indwelling catheters and all sorts of great stuff that you'll learn about. What else? Lots of meds. Hopefully all those look familiar to you as categories of heart medications you've studied. If not, take a quick look over them. Make sure you know what they are. Right? Need to cover all this in pharm? Or are you now covering all? You should have. Yeah. Okay. So what are some of our nursing diagnoses? Decreased cardiac output, excessive fluid volume, activity intolerance, that's always a good one. Okay. Knowledge deficit, again, such as a low sodium diet. Okay. Pulmonary edema can be a real problem. More nursing diagnoses, impaired gas exchange, fear. Fear is always a great nursing diagnosis. So hopefully I'm giving you some ideas for your PSHs. Decreased cardiac output. Okay. Rheumatic fever, talked about this. Carditis, myocardia, pericarditis. Got all these neat nursing diagnoses for these, so look them up and use them. Okay? What else? We do surgery, you know that. Good. I have another little project for you. This is much more fun than listening to me talk, right? Let me stop GarageBand. Stop. Thank you very much.